This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Rory Spears, and Len Zien.
All right, good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears, and joining me this morning from the Top of the World studios in beautiful Ocala, Florida, is our longtime radio partner now, Len Zien. Ed Stevenson has the week off. Eddie will be back with us next week. And Eddie will share with us some of his thoughts and reflections of our lost partner, Bill Berger. We were, of course, very sorry to see Bill pass a couple of weeks ago. And all of us here at Golfers on Golf Radio miss him very much. And so, Lenny, it's starting to warm up here in Chicago, but anyway, how are things down in Florida? It's got to be a little warm by you.
Boy, I tell you, it's brutal. It's, we've got a stretch of 90 degrees last 2 days, and it's going to go on all this next week as well. So, Joey and I, we found it a little better time to get into the swimming pool rather than the golf course, although we did play a real good course right where we live here for the first time this last week. So golf isn't out of the picture, but it's a good time to study what's going on with women's major coming up next week and all the noise going on with the men's tour. Never a dull moment.
Well, Len, as you know, we're getting ready for that stretch of U.S. Opens that are coming. And before we know it, the U.S. Women's Open will be here from the beautiful Lancaster Country Club out there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, about 90 miles west of Philadelphia. And back in 2015, Lancaster set the record for the most attended U.S. Women's Open in history. So if I know that club, they will be anxious to try to break their previous record of attendance for the week. So I hope that they can do it. And I'll tell you what, then, of course, we'll be at Pinehurst for the Men's Open. The U.S. Men's Senior Open won't be far behind. And, that's kind of an exciting part of the golf season, Lenny. We get three or four U.S. Opens in a row, and a couple weeks later, the Open Championship is here from usually Scotland or Ireland, and it makes for an exciting golf season.
Well, this particular U.S. Women's Open has really got me intrigued. I think that all of golf media, maybe not pointing at us, but the of course, have missed a really huge story in golf. I think it's kind of got the Nelly Korda story here has been unfortunately overshadowed a bit by all the political stuff and the Scottie Scheffler incident and Rory McIlroy's divorce and all that. That is kind of cluttered up the golf landscape, but this is really a greatly important individual story with what Nelly has been doing. I mean, she won five tournaments in a row, and that is extremely rare on any tour. Annika Sorenstam and Nancy Lopez were the only ones to do it on the women's tour, and on the men's tour, of course, Tiger had a couple stretches of winning streaks longer than that, but then so did Byron Nelson, of course, with a record 11, and Ben Hogan with six times in 1948. But Nelly is, she's won six out of seven now going into next week's U.S. Women's Open, and she's chasing some real big records on the women's front. She's a long way from the biggest one, of course, 13 wins in one season by Mickey Wright back in 1968. But what Nellie's been doing to me is just phenomenal in this day and age of golf. And I kind of feel like it's unfortunate that that it hasn't gotten the maybe the attention that it's deserved. I'm certainly going to be following it and doing some writing about Nelly leading in, and probably in post tournament as well for the U.S. Women's Open. And it's good it's at Lancaster, because that is, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a club that has done very well putting on a U.S. Women's Open tournament. So it's a big week for women's golf, a big, big week, and everybody should be paying attention to what's going on out there.
Yeah, I believe that, too. And another thing, Len, this weekend we have the Charles Schwab Classic at Colonial in Fort Worth, and our locals survived a very tough cut. I mean, it's not very many weeks on the PGA Tour where +2 for Thursday and Friday gets you into the weekend. But Kevin yeah. Streelman and Doug Gim and Nick Hardy have all made the cut, and we'll get a paycheck for this week. Most of them are down towards the bottom of the pile of the guys that are playing this weekend, but at least they're playing this weekend. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure what they've done to that golf course, but it's been a tough go. And Kevin Streelman, my pick of the week in my year-long fantasy pool that I know you're also a member of, needed a birdie on the last two holes or he was going home. And fortunately, he avoided the trunk slamming procedure and made a birdie on 17 and got to stick around for the weekend. So it's great to see. Doug Gim's about to tee off in a few minutes. Streelman is on the golf course, one over today, +2 for the tournament. And Nick Hardy is also... yep, Nick Hardy is one over par today, three over for the tournament, about getting ready to make the turn. And who knows, as warm as it is in Texas, it might be nice to be done with nine holes by about 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, and I'm glad you brought up the men here. This is only a kind of an aside on the men's golf, but this is Thomas Dietrich, who had played for Mike Small at Illinois, and who's Illinois is a great story right now as well. But Thomas Dietrich was fourth in the PGA Championship just a couple weeks or 3 weeks ago, and he's another one who made the cut. I was kind of following those cut names this week, and it's good to see the locals doing something, because they really it's been a tough year. Kevin Streelman has had some injuries. Doug Gim has had probably done the best of the local players, and none of those none of them have really done anything special so far. I mean, there's a lot. The heart of their season is coming up when they have the tournaments in more Midwestern type of things, in the Memorial and the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit, and of course our own John Deere Classic. But it's been a quiet year for the locals, but Dietrich was fourth, and he got lost in the shuffle of the great golf that was played in the PGA. But that's quite an accomplishment, a fourth place finish. He came out of nowhere to get that one with a good final round.
Well, Len, we're going to go to our first guest in just a minute, but before we do. You know, people were really wondering, why is Rory McIlroy getting divorced? And I noticed yesterday that the rumors are circulating that he might be having a new girlfriend already. And it's Amanda Baliones, the CBS post-round interviewer. And so apparently those two have been getting together. She's already... getting divorced from her marriage that only took place about a year and a half ago. So some strange times there. Two people who it seemed like were happy where they're at might be happier with each other.
Yeah, it's, I don't know whether any of this stuff is true. And the thing that gets me right now is that neither Rory nor Baleonis are making any comment about it. So that only lends the speculation that maybe they have something going. But divorces aren't much fun. I went through one, and these two are doing it in a very public, obviously a very public light, no matter whether they're whether there's a happy side to it for both of them or not. But I'd rather just focus on the golf now rather than the stuff that we've been focusing on sidebars almost a couple years now, at least. And I'm glad to see that we've got the great competition coming up now, because that's really what really excites me about the whole thing.
Well, yep, I agree with you. It'd be nice to focus more on golf, and other than the fact that the two tours need to get together and make a deal and straighten out what the future is going to be there. Also, players' issues, on and off the golf course. And, we've seen a little more sniping going back. At each other on social media. So remains to be seen what's going to happen with some of these issues.
Right. On another aside here, the positive thing here, this, I can't remember the last time, if ever, this ever happened. In the U.S. Women's Open, we've actually got two Chicago area players who survived qualifying rounds and will be playing at Lancaster. One of them is an amateur, Carolyn Smith from Inverness, who is playing for Indiana now after starting her career at Wake Forest. She was among the qualifiers at Briarwood in Deerfield a few weeks ago. And, of course, Elizabeth Sokol, now the only Chicago player on the LPGA Tour. She got through a sectional out here in Florida. So, anyway, I can't remember the last time you had Nicole Jarret. Has played well, and she's been about the only Chicago player. Occasionally there were some amateurs who would get through. Megan Furtney, I know, did it a few years ago while she was still when she was in her collegiate years. But having two Chicago girls, two women in the women's open final is a good positive thing. I'll be seeing how they do, as well as how Nellie Korda does, of course.
Yeah. And Len, have you ever had the chance to get out and play Lancaster? Have you been out there?
Never have. And by the way, you've talked about it, and what I've been reading this week about it, I sure wish I had. I haven't done a whole lot. We haven't done a whole lot of our travel stuff in the East, but that one ought to that one ought to get on the list, because that's got a great support staff out there for golf. We'll have to see if we can work one of those trips out.
Yeah, Len, we sure need to do that. And the other thing we need to do is start chatting with our first guest in the morning. And he's been on our show before, and we're thrilled to welcome him back, because his company has three new lines of outstanding golf shoes. They're the type that you wear and I wear on the golf course, and we practice in them as well. And thrilled to have back with us the CEO of Squares Golf Shoes, Bob Winskowitz. Bob, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fabulous, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Bob, we're doing well. We're starting to warm up here in Chicago, and it's getting to be golf season, and you can go out and play in shorts and a golf shirt. And, Bob, I know when that type of weather makes it up your way to the Northeast, everybody's looking forward to it.
Yeah, we finally got it. We're looking forward to a nice weekend here. I'm in New Hampshire, and there's not a cloud in the sky. It's about 75 degrees right now, so it's perfect.
Well, you definitely can't beat that. And I know that it's going to be a busy weekend for the golf courses around here in the Chicago area. Bob, I got to tell you, you know, your product, Squares Golf Shoes, when I go out and play golf with people and people see me in Squares, it's the most frequent question I get. Hey, you're wearing Squares. Do you like them? You know, people don't ask me much about my new clubs or the nice new putter I got from the folks at Bettinardi, but they all want to talk to me about Squares Golf Shoes, and we're going to let you talk to us about the fact that you've created three new styles of golf shoes for 2024. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, we launched about 5 years ago, and after about, Rory, I think you know the story, after about 4 months in, we got a call from Sir Nick Faldo, and we ended up partnering with him, wearing the shoes. We got Sepp Straka, who's won two times on the tour, and John Daly was wearing one with them. We've got David Duval, Mark Dalkovec, and we've got the best instructors in the world, David Ledbetter, Jim McClain, Rick Smith, and the reason is that over the years, people have lost sight of some of the key fundamentals of the golf swing, which anybody who's been in the instruction world and knows the game well knows that everything emanates from your interaction with the ground. And a lot of people confuse the fact that, you know, it's the club doing all the work or it's the ball. And I tell people that you create the lightning. The club is merely a conduit, a lightning rod that transfers that energy to the ball that just sits there. So, you know, as you back up the swing, you get to the point where, you know, there's an old saying in golf is pressure, the swing or motion. Motion is preceded by pressure. And that pressure is you pressing on the ground to create that interaction for ground force so that you can power the swing. So if you buy into all of that, which is true, then you start looking at the shoe in a totally different way, that it can either help you or it can hurt you. And I like to tell people that our shoe is a confluence of the old leather, which the two of you and myself, you know, this is what we played. We played in that old leather shoe with the metal spikes. And today, you know, when you look at the spikeless lightweight sneaker, like, you know, Squares is a confluence of those two. It's like a hybrid golf shoe in the sense that you can have cleats and you can have comfort. But we have the structure. So the structure in the shoe is where we paid a lot of attention to. So our shoe is all about the geometry of the toe box that just simply allows the toes to sit naturally. It's not a wide shoe. It's from where you establish wide, which is under the ball of your foot, all the way to the end of the shoe. We simply open it up. And brands like Hoka and Ultra have really followed our lead in the running world. So it's a known science and it's a known benefit for anybody that is either running or playing the sport. So we opened up the toe box, but then we focused on newer material. So every one of our shoes now has a microfiber upper. And a microfiber is a very interesting piece of material in a sense that it allows perspiration to emit from the shoe, yet it doesn't let water in. So this shoe is 100% waterproof and 100% breathable. And then what we did is we added components to this shoe like a heel stabilizer, which that heel stabilizer starts from the heel externally, goes down internally under the arch and gives people fantastic arch support and prevents rollover. The last thing I'd comment on is the traction pattern. The traction pattern, I believe, is one of the first AI-generated traction pattern that's got a rotational pattern and it's got removable cleats, only six of them positioned directly under the pressure points under the ball, under your feet, where you exert the most energy as you start the golf swing. So that will give you extraordinary ground connection. So all of this put together, Rory, is where we have now gone out and done study after study. And I'd like to say we're the most researched shoe in the market. And the reason for that is because we make some very bold claims and people are always trying to prove us wrong. And, you know, we can see now the difference between a spike shoe, our shoe, and like a FootJoy Flex spikeless shoe, the difference in distance is 9.1 yards. And this was done recently at an independent study at Utah Valley University by Dr. Tyler Staniford, who's a biomechanic, and he's a kinesiologist. And he studied the performance of these type of shoes because he knows that footwear makes a big difference in sport. So, you know, we got a lot going on, and we're excited for this year.
Well, Bob, I know, you know, one of the most maybe luxurious deals that athletes in professional sports, doesn't matter if you're in the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, what they're doing is they're getting shoe contracts, and it's so important that they have maybe the right look in some cases, but they need the feel and they need the level of performance that they expect, and that's why shoe deals are so important to players of professional sports. And also there are younger athletes that they pick a college based on the fact that the shoes they're going to be expected to wear are, maybe it's Adidas, maybe it's Nike, you know, whatever the brand is. It's a brand that they want, they feel gives them their best opportunity to perform. So, you know, it's the shoe is it's very important. And, you know, getting the feel of what you need for your round of golf, you know, is important to you. It's important to amateurs. It's important to professionals like Sepp Straka, who's the defending champion at the John Deere Classic. He came into Illinois on Monday for media day and then headed down to Texas. And he's at the Charles Schwab this weekend, sitting in fourth place. He hasn't teed off yet today, but he's in contention for another title on the PGA Tour. Lenny, what questions do you have about Square Shoes for Bob Winskowitz here, CEO of Squares Golf Shoes?
Well, Bob, I tell you, I've got this is not so much questions, but we're going to give you an endorsement here. I was intrigued by the Square Shoes when they came right out, and I think the second year you were out, I got a pair around the PGA merchandise show, and I'm still wearing the same shoes. I like them a lot, but more to the point right now, what's interesting here is that Joy Sarver, my better half here, she just got a pair in January, and they look really good. But more important, she's playing the best golf she has ever played right now, and it has to have something to do with those shoes. I've got to believe it because I can't get over how she. There's nothing else to attribute it to. It's not like we're playing more, that we've taken lessons, that we've changed clubs or anything else. But she is. All of a sudden playing terrific golf, and the only variable from the time before that is that she's wearing Square Shoes. It sounds like kind of a unbelievable plug there, but that's the way it is in this household.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say it like that, is that when you use the word unbelievable, it is true. It is, people find it unbelievable that just by simply changing your shoes, you can play better. Now, on the surface, that is unbelievable. But when you start to understand that you have to use the ground and your interaction with the ground, you know, presents balance and stability. So, you know, we were founded on a premise that if I can improve your balance and stability, you will hit the ball farther and straighter. You know, and I get into, I do a podcast where people want to bring up slicing, and they say, well, slicing is, you know, it's because you've got an open face, and as you hit the ball. I said, no, that's not true. That's not true. That's not the reason why you're slicing. That's not the reason you're slicing. Yes, the face is open when you come in, but that's you're ahead of the game. You've got to back that all up. The reason for slicing is weight distribution on your feet. You could be too much in your toes, too much on your heels, too much on the outside, the inside. It's all a function of weight distribution on your feet that puts your body in a position where that club face is coming open. So, you know, when I hear this, and I hear this from a lot of people, that they've changed their shoes, they're playing better. Well, that's because they've improved their balance and their stability. And there's very few places on a golf course where you're on a very flat surface. So if that's the case in your angle, say in a side hill, downhill, and you got a lot of flexibility in that shoe, then your foot is literally moving in that shoe. And what happens is your body's got an internal GPS, and it says, uh-oh, something's going on here. I don't feel balanced. It's kind of like if you're leaning over a cliff, you're leaning over to look down over a cliff, your body says, uh-oh, you know, and so you're grabbing the ground with your toes. And so when you're off balance, even though you may not feel it, you may not think it, your body is responding to it. So that balance and stability is paramount in center face strikes on the club and optimizing distance. And, you know, that's why the pros are so good, is the number one difference between a tour pro and an amateur is what we call postural control, which is a fancy word for the word stability. And stability is controlling your body, and I'll throw the word consistently in there, controlling your body consistently throughout a motion. And they can repeat it. Guys like us will go out and shoot 36, 46, you know. And the reason is, you know, we can't consistently repeat that swing. And they've got their balance down, they've got the stability down such that their body can open, you know, operate freely. But I will tell you, and, you know, you brought up something very interesting, Rory, is that the shoe right now in all sports and ground force is being studied by everybody. And the reason is because in all sports, they're limiting the performance of drivers and shafts and golf balls. They want to roll the ball back. Where else do you look for distance? Well, the only place you need to look for distance is the ground. How do you use the ground better? In baseball right now, that is the number one term in baseball, is how do you use the ground better? And in doing that, the shoe plays a big role.
Yeah, Bob, what I found interesting is when you look at the USGA testing center to see if something is complies or it doesn't, and people would think, well, you know, it's about the clubs or it's about the golf balls or it's, you know, things like that that they test for. But I was surprised to learn that they actually also test for shoes. And that's realistically the only thing they test for outside of balls and clubs.
Yeah, you know, and shoes is kind of, it's a funny thing. And I, you know, nothing against the USGA, but I scratched my head, is that first and foremost on a golf shoes, you can't put any alignment aids on a golf shoe. So you put all you want on a golf ball, a golf club, and that's really to establish the ball position, but they don't allow you to establish your body position with any kind of indicia. So, you know, so number one is no alignment aids on a golf shoe. That's number one. Number two is a shoe can't aid you in what they call building a stance. So you can't build a shoe to kind of angle the weight in the inside of the medial sides of your feet, so, you know, get better ground connection. You can't build a stance with the shoe. And there's a couple others, but those are the most important in footwear. But I will tell you this, that the tour pros, if you look at, I just recently did a study of driving distance on the PGA Tour. And I only got to year 2022, but I looked at 10 years back in 2022. You know, if you look at all the advancements that the club companies are telling you about, you would think people are driving the ball a million miles if you listen to the club companies. But on the PGA Tour, driving distance is only up about, I think it's about 5 yards in that 10-year period. And there was a recent study done by Arcos on amateur driving distance in a 5-year period starting going back from 2022. And 5 years prior to that, the driving distance, average driving distance was 225.1 yards. 226.1 yards. And then in 2022, it was 225.5 yards. So what it was telling me that over a 5-year period, people are losing distance. Now, how in the world could that be possible given all the innovation and drivers, giving club fittings and all of that? It seems unbelievable. But if I can tell everybody, and I've proven this, and we've proven this, the industry's proven it, that switching over to a spikeless golf shoe, you're losing 9 yards of distance, the industry went to about 63% spikeless versus a spike shoe. So you know, I can tell you that there's no other explanation for it, none. And when you think about where distance comes from, it places that focus, that spotlight on shoes. And so, you know, I think all the gains in driver technology has been mitigated by a spikeless golf shoe. Now, 82% of all tour players, 82% still wear a removable cleat. And the reason they do that is because they understand ground force and ground connection. So, you know, I think the golfer today needs to look at, as much as they take a look at that driver or the ball or the wedge or the putter, they really need to take a hard look at their golf shoe.
Well, Bob, three new lines this year. Speed 2, which I am really currently enjoying out on the golf course, and I believe it's helping my game. Velo, and then the Pro S2 are your three new lines for this year. And, Bob, before we let you go this morning and let you go enjoy your holiday weekend, let our listeners know how they can get a pair of Squares golf shoes on their feet and start adding some distance to their game.
Yeah, and it's Squares, S-Q-A-I-R-Z, S-Q-A-I-R-Z.com, no U in there. And starting tomorrow, Sunday, starting tomorrow, we have our Father's Day promotion starting early, and it's $30 off any pair of shoes, free shipping. And we have a free 30-day trial program that you can wear these for 30 days on the course. And if whatever reason you don't like them or doesn't meet your expectation, you can send them back for a full refund. And no other golf company's doing that. And we're doing it because we put our money where our mouth is.
All right. Well, Bob Winskowitz, CEO of Squares Golf Shoes, thanks for joining Len Zeem and I here on Golfers on Golf Radio. Always great to talk to you. And we're in, like I said, we're enjoying your shoes. And we'll be anxious to see what's new by the time 2025 comes along, because I can say this, having known your product now for 3 or 4 years, every single year, you guys upgrade your standards and you seem to just make a better performing golf shoe every year. Bob, with that, have a great weekend.
Thanks, gentlemen. Really appreciate it.
Okay. With that, we are going to take our first break. We will be back with our next guest, Elisa Gaudet, the CEO and founder of Women's Golf Day, that's got a new twist to it right after this. The Erin Hills Golf Club in Erin, Wisconsin is your home for golf on a true championship golf course. In 2017, Erin Hills hosted the U.S. Open, but next year the U.S. Open will return with the ladies getting the opportunity. This time, the Women's 2025 U.S. Open will be Erin Hills' fifth USGA championship. So why not come out and play the two-time U.S. Open course before the women arrive in 25? Erin Hills has now opened the 63,000-square-foot Drumlin putting green for those players with a tee time or staying overnight. Yes, the Drumlin has lights, so night golf is an option. If you arrive at Erin Hills later in the day and daylight is fading, why not try the Kettle 5-hole loop, which is comprised of holes 1 through 5 on the main Erin Hills golf course. Food and beverage? As some of Wisconsin's finest choices, including the in-house Fescue Rescue, a popular choice of Erin Hills golfers. Overnight accommodations, both in the lodge and the cottages, are filling up quickly. So make your tee times and book your play-in stays at erinhills.com or call Erin Hills at 866-772-4769.
DuPage Golf has reinvented the nature of golf in Chicagoland. After extensive renovations, the Preserve at Oak Meadows is reborn as a new, award-winning 18-hole golf course, practice facility, and environmental haven. The reviews are in. The Preserve at Oak Meadows joins the ranks of top courses in the country on Golf Week's Best You Can Playlist and is the winner of Golf Digest's Green Star Award and Golf Inc.'s Renovation of the Year. Visit DuPageGolf.com to book a tee time. Learn more about the Preserve at Oak Meadows at DuPageGolf.com.
The Misswood Golf Club, located at 1700 West Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's top public golf courses. This Ray Hearn design is a links-style course complete with Scottish-Irish-styled sidewall bunkers. Each year, Misswood plays home to the Phil Kozen Illinois Women's Open and has hosted other golf championships, including the Illinois State Amateur and the Women's Western Golf Association National Amateur Championship. This year, Mistwood has built an extension onto the driving range to hold even more golfers at one time. The Performance Center is constantly being updated with the latest in golf technology for club fittings and lessons. Mistwood has one of the largest staffs of Illinois PGA teaching professionals at any club. So come on out and enjoy Mistwood. Challenge your game through the holes of Kelpie's Corner. And after the round, enjoy the food and beverage of McWethy's Tavern in the clubhouse. For more information, call 815-254-3333 or visit mistwoodgc.com.
All right, 9:35. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears along with Len Zeme. And Lenny, as we both know, golf has grown in numbers of participants in recent years, especially since the sport started coming out of the COVID era of about 4 years ago. And the biggest demographic change has been with the ladies. I think there's more ladies playing golf now than ever. And one of the driving forces behind growing the game for women is our next guest. She is the CEO and founder of Women's Golf Day that is expanding a little bit this year. And to tell us a little bit more about it is Elisa Gaudet. Elisa, how are you this morning?
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
We're doing good. It's great great to hear your voice. Normally, we get a nice chance to talk to you down in Florida at the PGA show in January, but it's nice to have you with us here back on the show 5 months later. And Elisa, you know, you probably know firsthand, there's more and more women playing golf these days right now, and you've had a big hand in that. Several years ago, you launched Women's Golf Day, but it's grown so big that one day wasn't enough to handle it. It looks like you're now a week long.
Exactly, yes, thank you. Yeah, and as you mentioned, I guess we have definitely, since 2016, this is our ninth year, been working on it, and COVID also did have a big hand. As you mentioned, the stats from National Golf Foundation are that 800,000 women took up golf during COVID. So that's in the United States. So that's a pretty, you know, substantial number. But we are in our ninth year and have expanded. And when it started, it was the first Tuesday in June. And on when COVID happened, we started a digital day called Palooza just to have something fun, lighthearted. We knew people were kind of zoomed out, but it is digital, and it was like fast format and with giveaways and things for men and women. So that's May 28th this year. It was like the Tuesday before. And so then once we came out of COVID, we just kind of linked the two. So we go from the last Tuesday in May to the first Tuesday in June each year, and this year it's next week, May 28th, Tuesday, to June 4th, the Tuesday after.
Elisa, tell us a little bit about the numbers. I mean, when you first start something, you try to get as many participants as you can, and then you want to make sure that people aren't a one-hit wonder here today and gone by next year. But and I know you've traveled not just across America, you've traveled all over the world to you know, talk about this concept to clubs in other countries and other continents. And what kind of growth have you seen say over these eight 9 years and turn it into the event that it is now?
Yeah, so I think most recently, one I'm particularly proud of, and you're right, yeah, I have definitely put my miles in, is with Japan. In 2022, they had three courses. You know, we reached out. We have an ambassador that's there. You know, we have a wonderful group of people around the world that help us that are passionate about golf and seeing more women play golf, because we all win, you know, more golfers. Everybody in the industry wins. So I worked with the Federation, and I have been, and they've been incredible, the Japanese Golf Federation. And they, in 2023, had 138 golf courses participate. And they have a big multi-course owner called Accordia. They've been fabulous. It's run by a woman. So, you know, just making those connections and really seeing the possibilities for everybody has been wonderful. So, you know, I was out there in November. I met with them. And again this year with the Federation, with a lot of these other golf courses, you know, we expect to see that or bigger numbers in Japan. And then similarly, like you said, just different countries and cultures, you know, we grew pretty quickly. I think it's affordable. It's a golf course that registers with us. They decide if their event is public or private. If they want to charge a fee or not, so they can make money. This is entirely up to them. They just register with us, and we give them all the materials. And for the ladies, hopefully they can go out, you know, they just go to our website, find a location, and find what's closest to them, what speaks to them. Either it's, you know, and we have this year, Bring a Friend, a big campaign to, because our format is the first 2 hours, women either play nine holes, ideally a shotgun scramble, or you can take lessons. So that both hopefully are offered, because it is more of a, you know, player development, celebration of golf, less this particular day, less about competition.
Well, Lisa, I got to ask you, you mentioned Japan a couple of times there, but in the north suburbs of Chicago, not only at one of the courses I work at, but it seems like several of the other courses in our area, we've had a large response, and the clubs get great support from ladies of a Korean background. And, you know, who knew that when I was up at Black Wolf Run in 1998, that Sayri Park's win there was going to have the effect that it did. But we have multiple leagues of Korean ladies, and we found out that at several courses around us, it's the same thing. The Korean ladies are out in force playing golf. It seems like they really love to play, and it doesn't have to be a hot day. If it's kind of cool or it's windy or even a little rain mixed in, they still come out, and they are ready to play golf. What kind of response have you had from Korea?
Yeah, we haven't. It's one market that we haven't like physically gone to or tapped into as much. And I do agree with you. We've seen that in different areas, even in Canada as well, certain pockets of populations where perhaps it's either, you know, popular in their country. And in the last couple of years, this year and the past year, we're trying to focus on, you know, obviously every country is welcome, but we're, like I said, we need more people. We are growing, and we are, as soon as we get past this, going to be hiring. But yeah, we need more people. So we have been focusing on Japan, the U.S., Canada, and the U.K., and really trying to move the needle in the U.K. As big of a golf population as it is, that female, getting that kind of really going and giving them more opportunities, because that's really what this is about, you know, creating more opportunities, awareness, and bringing in new players, hence the, you know, the lessons, and allowing women to come in where they feel, you know, don't feel intimidated and welcome, and, you know, try it, and then from there they go on and do whatever they have an appetite for, you know, whether it's be a league player or play nine and wine a couple times a year.
9:42, you're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears, along with Len Zeem. Joining us for a few minutes is the CEO and founder of Women's Golf Day / now Golf Week, Lisa Gaudet. And Lenny, what questions do you have for Lisa this morning about Women's Golf Week?
Well, you know, this is I can't help but kind of try to draw a parallel here. This is kind of interesting. And we've seen the popularity of women's basketball take off with this Caitlin Clark coming right out of college and signing with the pros, and all of a sudden she's making more money than a lot of the men. And the women's tour, Rory and I talked about this a little bit before you came on, but it's an extraordinary year for women's golf competitively with what Nelly Korda has been doing on the LPGA Tour. Now I know your situation there is a little focuses differently, but I'm wondering if what Nelly's doing, or if the Pro Tour can help you accomplish all the what you're doing going forward. It would seem like taking the well-publicized career of Caitlin Clark, who's just out of kid out of college, and the stuff that Nelly's doing is terrific. It should help raise the profile of women in golf, it would seem to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's two components. So, you know, one is a professional, and then there's amateurs, you know, in the world of of sports, right, and what have you. So there's not, women don't necessarily, this is just the data, follow professional golf like men follow professional golf. So it's a little different, the data, you know, and this is all a lot of stuff we've researched extensively. I think what's happening is phenomenal. Of course, everybody wants a story. They need, you know, makes it a lot easier to engage any type of audience. So I think that that is extremely helpful. But, you know, obviously it's a lot of pressure on one woman and, you know, to carry an entire tour. I'm hoping to, I think it, you know, maybe conversely, I think that us getting more women playing golf would help a professional tour to be more attractive, or something they'd be interested in watching or going to, you know what I'm saying? Because we also do things like trips to Solheim Cup, or, you know, and it's not just that the trips are also AIG, and the trips aren't for men and women. But, you know, I think the more that we are doing things that help, or at least publicize, like this is, you know, the U.S. Women's Open, USGA, they're one of our partners. Of course, we are going to talk about that. Even if it coincides with our week, to, I think, bring awareness to that. So I don't know how much, you know, the tour influences getting women to play. And my question to you is, we've always been going to the same well in golf. We go to the people that are there, that are already there. We're telling the story to the people that already know the story. So I don't know how professional golf, if people aren't, if you don't know anything about golf, you're certainly not probably going to watch it on TV. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. We're trying to get the new people, having an active program that brings in new people and gets them to a point, you know, where they feel comfortable and they want to keep going. And it's up to the clubs to take it from there. But yeah, that's our whole, you know, it's like a player development program with having the new golfers and celebratory. And I also think just raising the awareness, you know, by having 1,300 locations in 84 countries, you kind of can't, you know, if you're on social media, you're going to hear about it next week. So yeah, you know, I think they all can help one another.
You're absolutely right. I mean, golf is and forever will be a participant sport first and foremost. And you're doing a great job of boosting the numbers of the women's side. That's great what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you may also think, and this is, you know, this is 23 years of being on the business side of golf. I think seeing women as economic influencers is really important. And the other leagues that don't have engagement, like, you know, NFL, NBA, have been doing it for a while. And it's, you know, kind of how I came up with this concept. So I don't know how many single guys are buying a house on a golf course. I think if you're, like, buying a house, going on a golf trip, or if they are, let me know, because I'm single, so where they're hanging out. But, you know, so whether it's that or, you know, and then we keep saying we want juniors. Well, I mean, getting juniors, unless you're going to wait until they've got a permit to drive, they got to get to the golf course. Usually that is the mom. So I think seeing that, you know, women having, whether it's, they don't have to be avid golfers, just have a good taste in their mouth, eradicate this word golf widow, and the long-term benefits of that, you know, are exponential, because there's influence there in a lot of other ways.
Elisa, I've got to ask you, has there ever been any thought about putting together some sort of national Women's Golf Day golf event where maybe people who participated in the local, at local clubs near where they live on Women's Golf Day or Women's Golf Week, get a chance to all come together and mix and mingle, maybe at a golf resort somewhere, and, you know, maybe a couple of days, whether it's a stroke play or a scramble or something like that, then people who have learned about golf through Women's Golf Day all could come together to one location and share stories and experiences.
Yeah, I mean, we've thought about something like a conference where I think you'd also get, you know, a little boost of inspiration, some great speakers, and some phenomenal women and men, you know, that I think people would want to listen to and what have you. You know, our thing right now is that we grew really fast. We do need more people. So, you know, it's an all year, all the time job. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of moving pieces. We've got, you know, I think the most pride too is that we have the three governing bodies, PGA, USGA, and RNA. And so throughout the year, you know, this is just the week that we do it, but throughout the year, you know, we're encouraging, we're talking about our partners and things like, you know, hey, go get a candy cap, or, you know, there is other types of ways to get involved, and we just really point people and try to keep them active throughout the year.
Well, Elisa, I'll tell you what, it sounds like Another exciting time for Women's Golf Day / Golf Week is here. And if people, you know, maybe they can't make it out to the club, you know, hopefully they can, but if they want to be engaged through social media or so forth, how do they do that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have, first starting on the 28th, which is next Tuesday, we have our Palooza that was burst out of COVID, but everybody loves it. So it's just a digital, you hop on, it's quick. There's a lot of giveaways. It's for men and women. Everybody's welcome. That's at Women's Golf Day on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We have a social media team, Nick, who does a phenomenal job with that. And then throughout the week, tag, and we have this really, you know, big this year, we're pushing the bring a friend. And that's our whole campaign this year is get social. So whether that's on the course or off, we hope people that are, you know, socializing. I think it's something that really feeds our soul, all of us. And I did hop on and see that. I did notice that in Illinois, we do have, I'm proud to say, a bunch of locations. And the TPC group, too, at Deer Run is doing an event. We've, you know, made sure we partner with the PGA of America, PGA Tour, and all the TPC courses are hosting stuff. They do a great job.
And finally, is there also a website if you're either an individual or a club looking to get more involved, whether it's this year or down the road?
Yeah, thanks. It's womensgolfday.com. And for anybody looking, we have a tab on the top. It says find a location. You know, it brings up, so you see a map. You can just put in your zip code, where you are, and it'll tell you what's around you. And then, yeah, for golf courses, they can register to host an event with us.
All right.
On the website.
Yeah, okay. Alisa Gaudet, CEO, founder of Women's Golf Day, and now a week-long Women's Golf Day. Thanks so much for joining Lenny and I here on Golfers on Golf Radio. And we'll let you rev up for an exciting week, and then you probably need a week off to relax from all the work that goes into this.
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you guys very much. We really appreciate this amplifying, you know, having me on or talking about it helps us a lot, and we do appreciate it.
All right, you're quite welcome. And if we don't see you sooner, we'll look forward to seeing you in Florida next January. All right, 9:52. Time flies when you're having fun. Len Zeem and I with you here for the last 7 minutes. And Lenny, what else sticks out to you in the world of golf this week as we start to move towards U.S. Opens on the calendar, and it's that time of year?
Yeah, we got to start thinking about that. It's another week beyond this one, but we've got to start thinking about the U.S. Open, the final qualifiers all around the country held the Monday. The way I think about it is there, and it's only one qualifier that there, but it comes the day after the Memorial Tournament wraps up. So that's the longest day in golf, they say that is, and I believe it. I mean, for guys like us, we've got to follow the results in about 10 areas of the country that will be coming in at all hours. It was always in my days at the Sun-Times, it was always a day that carried well into the evening, trying to find out where every local was and who was every sectional was and who did well. This week was an odd one for me, writing wise, for the Daily Herald and for my Pro Golf Weekly and in the associated sites with that one. But I was torn between, very torn between, as you could tell by my talking earlier about the media day that they held for the John Deere Classic, which is our biggest local event, and Nelly Korda and her run at history at the U.S. Women's Open. So what I did was kind of split them up. I'm focusing on the John Deere Classic and some information that came out of there as my main piece in the Daily Herald on Wednesday, and my more national sites will I hope give Nelly her just due for all that she's been accomplishing the first 6 months of the year. So it's a very exciting time in golf, and it's nice that it's not just on the men's tour; it's on the women's. The senior tour played at Benton Harbor this week. That's always been a nice week over there for competition. a lot of things we got to talk about, and this is a good time to do it.
Well, Len, I'm just looking at the leaderboard here for the Charles Schwab Challenge at in Fort Worth, Texas, Colonial. And unfortunately, our local players are all going backwards this morning. Not badly, just one over par, but in this really tightly bunched field, that's all it takes to to drop back down the board a little bit and not move yourself up into contention for either a win or a bigger paycheck. So Nick Hardy won over par today. Kevin Streelman is one over par today, and Doug Gim is only even par through a couple of holes, but he hasn't really gained any ground either. All of them have backed up 6 to 8 spots with today's scores. So hopefully they call it moving day for a reason on Saturday, and hopefully our local players will move up before the day is over.
You bet. You bet. I wish them the best. This is a kind of a make or break time in their season because not all of them are going to play in the majors or the remaining elevated events. So this is the time they get the best out of themselves for the sake of their futures.
Well, Len, an off-course incident that really gathered headlines at the PGA Championship was the arrest of world number one Scottie Scheffler, and it seems like a few more details have leaked out about that situation. The officer involved from the Louisville Police Department has been reprimanded through an internal investigation for not having his body camera turned on, but it seems like that's all it's going to do for him. But a couple new videos have shown up that don't make Scottie Scheffler look all too guilty. Did you get a chance to see any of that this week? And it seems like opinions are changing about what people initially thought about what this incident was.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting to see these new videos coming out. I don't know. I thought Scotty, from what we see of Scotty, and I have no reason to think otherwise, he's a good human being, a good person. He's he handled himself that day quite well. I mean, he answered the questions. He faced the media, unlike Rory McIlroy and his controversial divorce. Scotty did better with it. I think that what we should remember here is that they were trying to push this off the officer didn't have his camera on. Well, I think it would have been a mistake to just dismiss the charges on Scotty and let it go at that. I think that the right thing is to show that, if you'll pardon the allusion to politics, no one's above the law. And I think that I don't expect him to get seriously penalized, but I don't think it should have been just immediately dismissed either. So poor Scotty, he'll have a court case, I guess, coming up in June. And I don't anticipate any big dramatic penalties or anything like that, anything coming out of it. But I do hope it should bring a close to that incident, which is not something that you want to be seeing happen, especially during one of golf's major championships.
Mm-hmm. Well, Len, I know this week from being close to the situation, it looks like one of my employers, the Northbrook Park District, has settled on the architectural team of Todd Quitno, who will lead the project with associate current ASGA president Mike Benkuski, also riding along, are going to be the new architectural team replacing the retired Rick Jacobson through the Northbrook Park District system. And they will wrap up renovations at Heritage Oaks, both on the 18-hole course, the 9-hole course, and then eventually down the road, the Annitzberger 9-hole course that might see more of our junior play in years to come, and maybe over the next 6-7 years, they'll have about 3 projects to work on. So with that, we are going to call it a week. Lenny and I have putted out. Thanks to Brian for getting us out to all of you. And with that, have a great holiday weekend. Go play, everybody.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.